Good morning and thanks for being here. Thank you for coming to Designing Church. My name's Lloyd and I am absolutely nobody, but this week we've been able to hear from a few fantastic speakers about the idea of designing church. Because if you're like me, you get to spend a fair bit of time at church. Some of you are involved in all manner of ways and it does make you think about how we do things. This morning we have three expert speakers. Tim Gillespie will be joining us, and I'm going to introduce our first two speakers in one go to demonstrate an incredibly high level of efficiency. Our second speaker this morning is Colleen Savage. She's our Conference Director of Children's Ministries. She has been running the show over in all of those children's divisions, which I think just deserves a clap all on itself, because seriously, that is just one of the most massive jobs at Big Camp to help coordinate all of those children's divisions. And really, Big Camp without those children's divisions, would be a long conference. So thank you, Colleen. You're doing an amazing job there. And she's going to help us to appreciate that space. Our first speaker is my co-host, and I have a personal church philosophy that wherever I get dragged in to do something at church, that wherever possible, I try and drag a young person to do that with me because it's better. They're smart and they might want to learn. They may not, but sometimes they're interested and sometimes they're willing to make things better than it would have been. So, Aaliyah is our co-host. She's a first-year university student. She's studying environmental engineering. She participates a great deal at Walls End Church and makes our lives better there. She's also been involved in all of the good things like Connection for the last 2 years and for Big Camp many years before that, and summer camps and all sorts of good things. Please welcome Aaliyah O'Hearn.
Sweet, thanks, Lloyd. It's kind of weird being here because Lloyd's like all the experts and standing here like, I've done like a couple of things in youth. I'm here though because my church is brilliant at letting youth try. Just letting us try, knowing that it's not always going to be perfect, but yeah. We get to have a go. So we'll do a throwback, which is not really much of a throwback because I'm pretty young, the end of 2018. So I was in year 8 and I was 14 and on the our Walls End youth team. And yeah, December of that year, we had a meeting and we were like, what are we missing from youth? What's something that we can do that we don't have now that will make our youth better? And I'll give you some context because something, if you know me well, you know I just like to lack context in a lot of stories. So I'll be different for once and give you the context. Walls End Church is on the same campus as Macquarie College, high school, junior school, preschool, whole school. it's a bit of an interesting dynamic having the school campus and the church campus there together. And we kind of saw that and we wanted to create a space that would be a bridge between the two. Something that, yeah, our classmates and our friends would kind of see a taste of Jesus in chapels and especially in like the week of worship. But we wanted something that like was a bit more tangible and somewhere that they was kind of non-confrontational, that they could come and just experience Jesus and be anchored to how good God is. So if you can, I've got this. We sat down that meeting and fleshed out what this new thing was. We had no clue what it would be called. We just started planning. And we decided that we wanted a program. At the time we had, our pastor was Ben Ray, and he shared with us how when he was young, his church at Charlestown had done a similar youth program, and yeah, they invited their friends and it grew, and it was just like a really amazing experience. And he was kind of like, if that's something you guys want to do, yeah, like go out, do it. And so we kind of ended up with this plan-ish thing. But the main, like the questions we were asking is, who are we missing from church? What are we missing? How can we bridge that gap? And how do we let our friends experience Jesus? And so with some planning, as you can see, we ended up kind of picking two leaders that were going to be mentored into running this program that we didn't have a name for yet. And I remember sitting in the meeting and, you know, there's a vast age bracket of 14 to like 18 year olds. We didn't have a youth pastor at the time. We just had like our youth leader. So yeah, we did kind of felt like we lacked a bit of not work, but yeah, as a youth pastor, that's your job. You're paid, you get more time and more experience. So we're very much running on volunteers. So yeah, we were challenged to take it upon ourselves to create this space. So I still remember sitting in that meeting and them going, okay, so who do we want to run this? And I remember them going, like our group being like, hey, what about M Shield? And we're like, yeah, that's a good name. And then someone goes, what about Aaliyah? And I was just like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to do that. That's too much stress. But something I'm really thankful for is our youth leader at the time, Jake Whitaker, went, hey, how about we take someone who has a bit of experience in that place, Emily Shield, and let's put Aaliyah with her so that she can be mentored and grow in that space. And so we kind of, Emily and I kind of started this journey both. Em had a lot more experience than me, but still we both kind of bit out of our depths, no clue what we were really doing. Got a bit of guidance from Jake and he kept going, you know, come back to me if you want help. And yeah, it was just a really good soundboard and we had our team, which was great. And so the start of 2019, we did our first anchor program. And yeah, something that we found with anchor was... Yeah, that's what we named it. Another context clue that I forgot to mention. I'm glad you guys all caught on. Yeah, we started 2019 and we advertised it at school. And the first week, there was like a pretty like decent turnout for what it was. Like there was a fair few of like our regular youth and like a couple of friends came. And then... we finished the first program and it was sweet. Like it was great. And I remember Jake saying to us, okay, so what you're going to do now is you're going to reevaluate. And I was like, dude, we just did this sick thing. Like, why do we need to do that? But I'm so thankful that there was people in those spaces of leadership that taught us that from the very start. Because from the beginning, after every program, we'd have a debrief and we'd go, what worked? What didn't work? How can we make it better? How can we make it more intentional? How can we reach the people and the purpose that this is striving for? And in the meeting in 2018, we ended up coming with like a bit of like a purpose ethos statement. And I cannot for the life of me find the exact words. Because I remember Densley Ross had like this beautiful way of writing it. But yeah, can't find it. So I have the general idea, which was Anchor was to be a program that would bridge the gap between school and church and give students a way to become anchored to Jesus. And that was something pretty special. And so something that I've loved is that as we continue to go and develop Anchor and make it better and reevaluate, we were constantly aligning ourselves with the purpose. And yeah, something I challenge, like in when you go back to your churches, if you feel like there's a space where your youth are like, hey, we feel like we're missing something. Hey, we feel like we could have a Friday night program. Talk to them, challenge them to do it. Like, it's not easy. Sometimes there was the panic of, oh my goodness, we don't have a drummer and we're starting in like an hour. But are you afraid to laugh? Because that's happened many times. But you work through it and it ended up being a really cool space that is still going and it's evolved into something different than what it started with. But I think that's really beautiful because it doesn't have to stay the same. It was just great. And then, you know, the program kind of went along. If you can... I keep forgetting that I have this. Okay, so this is like our 2019 attendance list. Something that I loved about Jake Whitaker is he like froths on like Excel documents. Like he will spend hours just doing stuff like this. And this is like bare minimum for him. So I myself will not put myself through that torture, but I very much appreciate his work. But yeah, this is one of the graphs we had at the end of 2019. And we as a team, when we met together, we were like, week 12 is pretty hectic. What happened there? And so it was really cool to be able to get to the end of that year and debrief and go, hey, why did that one peak? Why did the other ones kind of drop off? What are we doing? What can we do better? How can we improve it? And that's the constant part of designing a ministry is going, what are we doing well? What's not so great and can be improved? And how can we just better connect? So then came 2020, and most people know what that brings. That was good old Rona. And we had to reevaluate again, and that was a pretty hectic change because we kind of felt we just got in this nice space of, you know, growing the program and it being in person, and then they're like, psych, you're not going to be in person. So, we sat down and we went, how can we still connect to this group of people that we have coming to a program? And we decided to take Anchor online, which was a lot of work and definitely by no means easy. I'm very thankful for, some of the hardworking adults in our church, like my dad, who does a lot of live streaming in church. I said, hey, would you want to help us like live stream Anchor? He's like, yep, we can do that. No, like, really? I have to spend more time doing this. He was just ready and willing. So we did that and we ended up having like every week was kind of like every time we did a program was kind of different, but sometimes we'd have different band members filmed at different times and then stitched the video together. It was very complicated. Other times you'd be like fully social distance across the stage. So you'd be standing here like playing guitar and cajons like the other side of the stage. But it worked. It was great. It worked and we got a program together and we'd have a speaker video themselves and we had like hosts do little interactions. One of my favorite videos, and if you ever want to see it, come find me after. Like it's dead set hilarious. Every time I watch it, I die. But the title was Quick Shots. Wait, quick. I can't even say it. Quick Trick Shots with Braden for your quarantine troubles. It is the most brilliant video I've ever witnessed and like just experienced. And that was one of the creative things that came out of it. It was people going, hey, we can't do an icebreaker like we usually would. Let's find something new and engaging that still kind of draws them in. And so, yeah, we had some mad editing skills. We had like hide and go seek around the church. That was a very hectic one that was entertaining to say the least. And cooking randomly. I don't think you should be allowed to cook and just take out ingredients, but some reason we did and it tasted kind of great. Not going to lie. So maybe try it yourself. But yeah, that was very much a time where we had to adapt and we had to reevaluate. And one thing that we weren't even expecting was that we got this feedback that families were going home and watching the program with their teens. So it was no longer just like drop your kid off at Anchor and then go home and pick them up in a couple hours. They were sitting together as a family and coming into Sabbath, watching this program together. And then there was our next part that we kind of had to reevaluate was after our anchor program, we'd have food together and we'd have little snackies and, we'd have time to connect. And so, you know, kind of hard to do that when you're away from each other. But we ended up going and having Zoom meetings. And so you'd have your, like, watching the program with your family, and then you'd all come together and be able to really just connect on Zoom. And it wasn't perfect. Like, we did some cahoots that, you know, internet doesn't always work greatly. But it was finding a way to answer what we were missing. And for us, that was Zoom. So, yeah, that was actually a really great thing to do. And so kind of to take away from all this, because like after we were allowed kind of to go back and we reestablished Anchor as like an in-person thing, and we're still reevaluating, and Em and I aren't like the leaders of it anymore. We've been able to mentor younger generations into it, which has been really amazing to see, because I've seen one of the youth at our church be like, oh, well, like, I don't know whether I could do this. And I'm like, no, you can, because I stood in that place not that long ago and was like, I've got no clue. I don't have skills in this. But you don't have skills now, but we're going to mentor you into it. So that's something that I really just love to see, and love to see the progression. So kind of the outcomes that I want you guys to be able to take away from this is that let your youth try new things. Let them make mistakes. Let them do things that you know aren't going to work. Well, not that you know aren't going to work. Teach them to do things that are going to work. And when they're not going to work, help them find a solution and a better way of doing it. And it won't always work. We had many a time where we were just like, well, that didn't work, but what can we do better? We very much had high expectations. We thought that, you know, your first program would kick off greatly and then it would just be excelling from there. But, you know, that's not always how life works. And, yeah, just I challenge you to help them grow into a space of leadership, and also give them the opportunity to ask for help along the way, because that's definitely what helped us continue the ministry. If you don't remember anything else but this, reevaluating for us was the key to success. And I've seen it in many other places in church and church design, that reevaluating helps you understand where you're going great and what you're missing. So yeah, for Walls End Church, it gave youth with minimal skills an opportunity to learn, to grow and to lead. It wasn't always the highest quality, but it was authentically ours, and it was for youth and by youth. So go and help your youth do great things.
Yes.
Yes. About God.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I think church is important because you can learn about God and Jesus.
I think church is important because you're going to God's place and worshipping Him.
I think church is important because you get to spend time with your community.
Then you'll get to worship God and learn about His stories.
When you grow up, you know all these things about God, so you'll be very kind.
I like going to church because it's fun in Sabbath school and learning about God and Jesus.
I like going to church because the worship's fun.
I like going to church because there's heaps of things to do and it's better than sitting at home.
Because there's so much things to do at church, and they prepare lunch.
Seeing friends and like hang out with people.
I do get asked things like doing the offering and playing instruments on the stage sometimes.
I get asked to sing sometimes in church.
I got asked to be Mary at Christmas time and to do other things like that.
Asked to play guitar.
Yes, I get asked to sing for youth.
I get asked to sing.
Yes.
Yep.
Some adults know my name, but mostly kids do.
Kids know my name and so do adults.
Nearly everyone knows my name, including Lucas.
Lots of adults know our names because we, like, learn together and we see each other.
Not much, but sometimes.
A lot of people know me because my dad's friends with nearly everyone at church. And he's, like, introduced me to nearly everyone he knows.
Something good for kids is that they do the children's story.
For the Easter program, we get Easter eggs.
Something good for kids is they make the church interesting.
And we can learn different things together.
I think the church does really well as they've got really good singers and really good people to perform and good speakers.
Have like a church, so they have like Sabbath school where you learn, and then you have church where you like sing songs about God. And I think that they're really good at like singing songs in church.
They do adventurers and pathfinders. The music's really good.
Lunch.
The lunch and the donuts.
Everything.
More adventurers and pathfinder camps.
Make a better place and more things to do, like a playground and garden.
Make it more fun and creative.
Give out presents every Christmas time for fun.
So I reckon putting some sport, like some like silent ball in there, in church maybe, hopscotch outside.
I think they could do more adventures.
I think they could do this children's stories much better and, like, make it a bit more longer and do some more children's songs.
Good morning, everyone. Isn't it important to give our children a voice? So it's really wonderful to hear that these kids had really positive experiences about church. But what about those children who have not had positive experiences, including seeing church as irrelevant, being excluded, find it boring, unfriendly, and even worse, unsafe? This week here at Big Camp, there was a lady who came into one of our children's divisions. This is her first Big Camp. She's just become a Christian. And she walked around and she said, "This is amazing. I love all these activities, songs, stories about the Bible the kids are learning. When I was a young girl, my parents put me into a weekly VBS program just because they needed some supervision for me while they were working. And I learned about this God who created the world and who created me and how loving he is." And so after the VBS, life went on as normal, not a Christian family. And, you know, she got older, things got really downhill for her. She hit rock bottom and she realized and she remembered back then when she was a child, this experience that she had as a child, and remembering that there's a God out there who loves her and cares for her, and she went exploring for that more and has since come to the church. So the seeds were sown and only harvested many years later. So those people who ran that VBS might never know the impact they had on her. Which brings me to my next points about the three main ingredients which retain our children. Belonging. Why is belonging first and the most important? New families can tell within 5 minutes of walking to a church whether they'll probably stick around or even bother coming back again. Everyone needs to have a sense of belonging. Children especially long to belong. There was a 12-year-old boy who came into one of our tents. Also, the first time, he didn't know anybody, he didn't know anybody, nobody befriended him, nobody spoke to him. Do you think he wanted to return the next day? Not a chance. So it took a lot of encouraging for him to try it again. We spoke to the leaders. They hooked him up with some friendly boys, and now he is loving it. But what if those boys weren't encouraged to include him or thought he wasn't cool enough to do so? What are the chances that boy would have returned? One of my favorite quotes by President Roosevelt, and that I try and live by myself, is people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Believing, second. Why? Once you belong, you want to find out what makes these people, this church, different to other places. Then you'll be more open to what the beliefs are. But if their beliefs are lived by rigid rules and not much love, we will lose our children. People in churches need a strong, Bible-based foundation on which to stand on, a strong relationship that is built off faith and love and the belief that Jesus is our rock. He carries us through thick and thin, and that we really need him in our everyday lives. Third one. Becoming. Once we belong and find out what the beliefs are and you agree with them and feel that these people are genuine, you want to have what they have and feel the need to become more loving and accepting like them, especially our teens. They can pick a phony from a mile away, right? So the Barna does research every few years, and they did research in Australia and asked a whole lot of teens. I think it was over 1,000 or 2,000 teens that they asked. And the top concern that the teenagers expressed was their mental health. We all know that mental health is on the rise, especially amongst our children. This is a whole other talk, but our youth are struggling today with fitting in, belonging, special needs, gender identity, pornography at their fingertips, trying to be a Christian in secular, and yes, even our Christian schools. Depression, anxiety, and suicidality rates have never been this high. Children are cutting themselves to ease and feel their pain by physically hurting themselves and release the pain. Children need safe relationships. Our churches and its people should be safe places. What do safe relationships look like? Giving hope. With so many things around them, feeling their anxieties, other places people cannot guarantee hope like churches can, showing brotherly and sisterly love, compassion, forgiveness, grace, and encouragement from adults, learning that it's okay to make mistakes. Research says that in order to have resilience, we need two things: safety first and trusting relationships. Churches can at times be unsafe, but shouldn't that be our point of difference to the rest of the world? Safety and hope in Jesus and trusting relationships through showing these characteristics. So we often blame the culture, churches, Hollywood for leading children away from the faith. We even blame parents because of their lack of commitment to pass the faith on along to our children. While these can and definitely do contribute to the demise of our child's faith, the church must look in the mirror and see that we are a big part of the problem. We are failing kids in many areas and becomes glaringly obvious as they grow older and don't want to have anything to do with church. I don't want to focus on the negative, but if we are looking at designing church, it doesn't help to sugarcoat things, right? Because then we think we're under the impression that things are okay. So I'm going to raise some things of concern that's happening in our churches, and then hopefully we can take these notes to turn them around and to make them into the positive. So according to Dale Hudson from Building Children Ministries, he first said the church is failing to teach kids doctrine and teaching them why we believe what we believe. Yes, I know what you're thinking. This is head knowledge and not heart knowledge. But how can we have heart knowledge if we don't know the head knowledge to apply it and stand up for what we believe in? We're teaching them to be good. We're teaching them good character traits, which is very important, but we're not teaching them doctrine. Some churches are not teaching them about the Trinity. Some churches don't know, some children don't know why baptism is important. Some children don't know many Bible stories and its promises. If they don't know that, if they don't know the contents, how can they grow closer to Jesus and have a personal relationship with him? It's hard to defend and share what you don't know or understand. It concerns me that some of our church schools don't want to teach substance to the students because there are so many non-Christians in the schools. So when they get to university and their faith is really tested, it becomes glaringly obvious that they can't back up what they believe. The church is not an amusement center. Yes, it is to have fun, as we just heard in the video clips from the children, and in the needs to provide fun, memory-making experiences, sharing jokes, laughing a lot, because those shared endorphins calms and bonds people. What is one thing... However, the latest Generation Z and Alpha are saying that they can find entertainment everywhere they go. What they want is a substance that they can only find at church. What is one thing that the church can offer but other entertainment cannot? Hope and comfort. Hope in their futures, hope in someone always there to comfort them in their trials. They don't have to face things alone. Like Jeremiah 29 verse 11 promises us, I know the plans I have for you, thank goodness, declares the Lord. They are plans for peace, not disaster, to give you a future filled with hope. Number two, the church is failing kids by not giving them opportunities to serve. Some of us have forgotten that faith without works is dead. We're taking kids who are ready to serve and telling them that their time will come, that they will have to wait until they're older to start serving. The problem is that when they are older and then you want them to, the ship has sailed. They're no longer interested. I know of two boys who constantly offered their services to play the guitar and to sing. They were never taken up. They have since left the church. No sense of belonging. Whenever a child wants to offer help, say yes. They thought outside themselves. One child was at a church wanting to offer the drinks to the people. He went around to all the people, and people said, "No thanks, I have my water bottle." Just take the drink. Give children opportunities to hold welcome banners outside the church, be at the door welcoming people, playing instruments, drama, singing. Drama, I know Scott is right here. He's a fantastic resource. He's my go-to man for drama if you need dramas written up. Take up the offering, be on the sound desk, preaching, taking photos, posting church social media posts, organizing community events where different generations can be working together, making costumes, cooking, baking, serving, cleaning up, and anything they're gifted in. It is our job to find out their interests, talents, and gifts, and provide experiences and mentoring, as Aaliyah pointed out for us, which she does a great job in, and giving them the opportunities and to be shining lights for others. Getting out of their comfort zones, and for us, modeling to them getting out of their comfort zones, like I am right now, and so they can learn to rely on God, not on themselves, which is what the world is teaching them to do, right? Number three, the church is failing to disciple kids through relationships. There are so many children who hear that church is an extended family, God's family, but no one knows their name, the grade they're in, their interests, their challenges, and their triumphs. They then question, what kind of a family is this? Maya Angelou famously said about speaking to parents, but I believe this can be in the church context too, your eyes should light up when your child enters the room. Just imagine the feeling of belonging that comes with that. Number four. The church is failing to help our kids enter a relationship with Jesus. We know that the vast majority of people who come to Christ do so before they are 18. We don't have a strategic plan in our churches to reach them. I encourage you to have a vision, a statement. When I was at in Sydney, our church pastor would constantly remind us what our church vision is, so that everyone is on board with this and take it to heart. Then I thought, as the children's ministry leader there, I thought, I'm going to have my own church. I'm going to have my own vision as a children's ministry leader. And I thought, oh, does it have to be something grand and glorious? And I thought, no, it's something for me to live by and to strive by. And mine was as simple as, I want my children to beg their parents to go to church every week. Not the other way around, to beg their parents to go to church every week. And that's what really encouraged me and kept me going, and to organize events for them. Plan activities around that. For example, at the baby and toddler stage, offer parenting courses, organize play groups for the children and caregivers to build those relationships. Then at the next age and stage, we will cater for the children through Bible studies, food, and games. That's always a dangling carrot there. Then at the older age, we will get the older children to give Bible studies to the younger children. Organize activities around the church based on their congregation, adults, and children's strengths, and provide community service project based on surrounding community needs. I had teens coming to me asking what they can do to help. You plan the experiences and the Holy Spirit does the rest. Is that not consoling? To me it was, is still. Number five, the church is failing to show the kids how to share their faith. We haven't given them the tools and infused them with the confidence that God is with them when they share the gospel with others. Having God confidence, not self-confidence, and developing and growing their faith in the Holy Spirit and organizing opportunities that comes with getting out of their comfort zones again to reach others. These are the kind of things that grows faith. Dependence on God. Number six. The church is failing to help kids see that it's not about them, it's about bringing honor and glory to God. We've unknowingly taught kids that God is a divine therapist and exists for our pleasure. Yes, he can be like a therapist, but it's not just about what we can get out of it, but about serving others and putting others first. Like Brenda Walsh says, you go to church to be a blessing, not to have a blessing. Number seven, the church is failing kids by not equipping their parents to lead them spiritually. We know parents are the number one influencer in kids' lives. They want to lead their children spiritually. Many just don't know how. We fail to give them simple, easy-to-use tools for the best way to do this through attending Sabbath schools and watching the teachers teaching the children and encouraging the importance of family worship. I often say the beginner Sabbath school is one of the most important divisions in the church. Giving and showing the parents resources that they need to do this. Worship looks different in every family, and the kids will often tell you that family worship is the most special time, and that's when the families grow closer together. Just as a side note, there's been a research, and there's only about 20 to 30% of families these days are doing family worship. Number eight, the church is failing to help kids develop a biblical worldview. Because of this, the next generation has brought into the postmodern worldview that holds up the mantra of tolerance, abortion, same-sex relationships, don't judge anyone, and more. We aren't to judge anyone, thank goodness, but we have to have discernment between right and wrong, to love, empathize, and try and understand the why of the pain people are experiencing, and to make these decisions, and come to these conclusions, and giving them love, support, compassion, forgiveness, and grace, just like Jesus did. The church is failing to help parents to see how important it is to have their children in church consistently. Church attendance has become just another to-do list. If nothing else is going on, they'll show up. But if there's something more appealing, they will skip church. As a result, kids have shallow biblical knowledge and are only loosely connected at church. Parents have lost the connection and importance of regular attendance and the sense of community, belonging, believing, and becoming that goes with it. So give our children a reason to go to church. Encourage them and give them responsibilities with things they enjoy. Encourage them to try new things. Get families serving together so they all have a reason to attend together. Family cell groups is another way of doing church that forms a sense of community and bonding. So I don't want this presentation to be discouraging for you. I simply want to wake up churches that are failing their kids. We can't keep doing the same old thing and expect kids to follow Jesus for a lifetime. As Henry Ford said, if we do what we always did, we're going to get what we always got. I would encourage you to take each of the challenges I listed and sit down as a team in your church families. Talk through these points and see how your church can improve in these areas. It may mean some radical changes. It may mean a new ministry philosophy or vision statement. It may mean changing your strategy. It may mean asking some hard questions or pursuing the answers. you find. We shouldn't change our values, but we might need to change the strategies and old ways we are desperately trying to hang on to that simply don't reach our children anymore. What did Jesus do? He sat with the children, let them sit on his knee, and found out about their interests, their fears, and their strengths. Don't be afraid of the hard questions. After all, Jesus tells us in Deuteronomy, Matthew, Mark, and Luke 4 times, love him with all your heart and soul and mind. We have minds to think and question. So encourage our children to ask and discover the answers with them. I'm reminded of what happened in the Old Testament. After that generation died, another generation grew up and did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel. The next generation of Israelites didn't remember or know God because those who should have been teaching them neglected to do so. Those walking in our footprints are counting on us. Let's not let them down. Let's be intentional. And I'd just like to finish off with 6 tips that I want to give you for a sense of belonging, believing, and becoming. Know your child by name, each child by name, and encourage them to serve. Give our children a sense of awe about Jesus through his amazing Bible stories in fun, interesting, and in-depth way. Encourage our families to do family worship at home. Don't badmouth our children in our church in front of our children. Why would they then want to go to church? A mum is teaching her son how to drive, and he speeds up and goes ahead. And she asks why, and he said, "That's what you do." They're always watching and listening, no matter what their age. 5, connection before correction. With our own and especially other people's children, have a relationship with the children before you need the field to correct them. Unless they're in imminent danger, of course. 6, teach children to have God confidence, not self-confidence, because he loves us more than anything, and he promises us that through him, he gives us strength, and all things through him are possible. One more thing I remembered. Just lastly, look after your volunteers in the churches. Cherish them. And a sign of a healthy church, children are inviting their kids to come along. Why do you think that is? Thank you.
Thanks so much, Colleen. Our final speaker is a guy named Tim Gillespie. Thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks for having me. Is the remote? Yeah. Where'd it go? I need that. Welcome. Thanks for coming back. We've got short time, so we'll speak quickly. I hope that's okay. We're talking about church branding, and we're talking about church by design. And I kind of gave you yesterday the process that we had gone through, first trying to identify who it is that we were trying to reach and really personalizing those people, putting language in their mouth so we could kind of understand what it is they were thinking and what it is we wanted them to feel. But then we had to ask the question of what we were, what kind of church we were, what was our identity, where our strengths were, where our strengths lie. And then we had to ask the question, what is our archetype? Because when you do a branding piece, you kind of personalize it. You bring a persona. You anthropomorphize is the big word, right? You put human characteristics to the brand of which you like. So, for instance, I don't know all the brands in. What would Sanitarium's persona be, right? Would that be a carer, someone who's caring? Would it be somebody who's a rebel? Would it be somebody who's, you know, all brands have a different sort of archetype. And if you know the idea of an archetype, if you've ever read any piece of literature, you know that there's the explorer, that there's the mage, there's the the wise person. And we do this in branding to find out what our archetype is. So we actually did this process after we looked at that pyramid, saying what services do we bring to the to the space? What kind of, yeah, there it is. Thank you for putting that up. What's our brand structure? What do we look like? What is our personality? This is the piece where it gets sort of interesting, right? Our personality, if I can read it from here, is real, creative, unafraid, casual, forthright, minimal, accepting, genuine, excited about details. I'm having a hard time reading that, but that's not your fault. It's the colors that I chose. Anyway, that became really interesting because now we had to say, okay, well, what kind of archetype are we? If we can go back to that archetype slide, you're awesome, man. We had to say, what kind of archetypes are there? So there's archetypes such as the ruler, the artist, the innocent, sage, explorer, outlaw, magician, hero, lover, jester, everyman, caregiver, and ruler. There's the 12 specific archetypes, and then there's about 500 archetypes that go underneath that. And you think, okay, well, why does this even matter, right? Why would you put a personality to a church? Well, it's because you want people to be able to identify with it. Remember, brands speak more about the consumer. I don't know why it sounded like that. Consumer than it does actually about the brand itself, because you begin to identify with it and you say, hey, I want to be a part of that thing. And so we began to go through the process of figuring out where we were on this archetype kind of color chart and figuring out where we would land. I won't go through the whole thing, but I'm going to read this to you because this is what we became. This is the statement of who we believe we are. We are the cultural liaison, and I love the language that our brand manager put to this. We've always been questioners, dreamers, hole pokers, and often misfits. But eventually, we found our gift, a love of beauty, aesthetic, truth, creativity, and really, truly experiencing our lives. Our work gives us great personal joy, and we're really good at it. But then personal joy isn't our real motivator. Deep down, we're sharers. We'd rather teach someone to paint than sell a painting. We're at our best when we bring people in, those who might not have access or understanding, and push them to go, do, see, love well for themselves. And then we challenge them to bring someone else along too. We're not great rule followers or what you think of as proper. We tend to say things out loud that others won't, but we believe our gifts bring people from all backgrounds to the table, teaching them to appreciate great food and art, a wider perspective, and a real, honest conversation. We're artists, translators, mavericks, seekers, and awakeners, but most of all, we're door openers, inviting anyone who walks by inside. When our people read that, you know, somebody who's getting engaged in church and is wanting to volunteer and some, you know, from barista to a welcomer, a greeter right at the door, to someone who's working in the kids programs, really doesn't matter. When they read this, all of a sudden they go, oh, okay, I want to be that, or I am that. That resonates with the language that I have, that I think about myself. And all of a sudden they not only have a stronger connection to the church, they understand our mission to love well even more, and they understand how we do it. So this is a beautiful comment. That just died. Maybe it's coming back. Doesn't matter, I can look back here. Anyway, that's a beautiful comment, but then you have to actually personalize it. And what we do, the process of branding is you actually put, or identity, is you connect it to a specific person or a cultural person in the world so you can kind of put, you know, hang your hat on it. And I'll show you ours in a second. I just did this process. With a church in our conference, and we went through this whole thing. It was a really strong pastor, right? And he was struggling the whole time as we went through this process and identity. And I said, okay, when we got down to everything, I said, your persona, your cultural kind of icon that personifies your church is Jimmy Fallon. Right? A late night show. He brings people in. He's kind of funny, a little charismatic, a little extra sometimes. And it was so funny because the pastor goes, well, I'm not like Jimmy Fallon. And I said, but this is not you. This is what your people and you want your church to be. And this has to live beyond you. I could see him be uncomfortable, but the people in the church that had gone through this process were like, yeah, that's exactly who we are. They were the networker. That was what their church really was. And I said, listen, you know why you guys are a networker? Let me explain to you how we know this is true. The way you set up your lobby has a couch so people can sit down and network with one another. I would never put a lobby in my couch. That's just going to... Well, I certainly wouldn't do that because I don't even know what that would be. I would never put a couch in my lobby because we need to keep flow happening through my church. Like, we can't. Why would I wait, have people sit in the lobby for 15 minutes getting to know one another? That's not the kind of church that we are. But that's exactly the kind of church that they were. And they didn't do that after they found out they were the networkers. They did it because they were the networkers. And it became kind of this metaphor of the kind of church that they wanted to be, which was really important. And then we wrapped language around it, and then we wrapped a persona around it, and then they had something in their head with Jimmy Fallon saying, okay, yeah, that's the person we are. So ours was a little different, and this figure's a little bit controversial sometimes, so if you don't like this figure, I get it, and he had a tragic ending, which is horrible, but this is the persona that we chose, or that we sort of, that kind of bubbled up to the surface. It was, what's his name? Anthony Bourdain, right? Because Anthony Bourdain was a Michelin star chef who walked away from that world and did a show where he was eating street food with regular people and, you know, with Obama. But he would eat street food and just bring you into his experience. And so these are the values, right? The description: talented to a master level in their creative field. Feels like we're going to blow away all of a sudden. Could be doing their role solely for their own gain, but feels a need to do more for the world without compromising excellence. Uses their gifts to bring people together and find commonality. Dissatisfied with consumption, challenges audiences to action and teaching what they've learned. Often broken or a misfit, not always polished or mainstream, but still genuine and intentional. Right, and then we went through all these different keywords as we were talking about it. We probably had 400 different keywords. These are just the ones that kind of bubbled up to the surface. This became really important for us, not because we all loved Anthony Bourdain, but because we were like, okay, we get it. We're a little irreverent. And if you guys have heard me talk, by the way, I'm a fan of the Adventist Church. I don't know if you know this. Like, I am part of the Adventist Church. Every once in a while, people are like, you make fun of us too much. Like, I've been investigated by the Adventist Church and found to be Adventist. So when someone's like, you're not Adventist, I'm like, I got the receipts, brother. Like, I know for sure I'm an Adventist. I stay regardless of this. But you know, it's funny that, because that's kind of our persona. We've always kind of encapsulated that. We want to do really well. We want to be a master at what it is that we're offering. But at the same time, we want to share and bring people in. And what's interesting is that as the church has accepted this persona, they really feel that their responsibility is to bring other people in too. And this is what's really interesting, I think. We have a tendency to think that evangelism is a program, it's an event. We have evangelists that we pay that come in and do evangelism. That's great, that's all wonderful. I just don't think that that's really what evangelism is at its core. Evangelism is the orientation of the heart of the people that sit in the pews. I don't do evangelism, I run church. And every day when they bring new people into the church because they appreciate what we do it at a master level. They know they're not going to be embarrassed when they bring their friends to church. They know we're gonna preach for something, not against something. When that happens, churches grow exponentially. I actually had my conference president one time say, you know, you're the biggest problem that we have in this conference. And I was like, well, it's not the first time I've heard that, but why this time? And she said, because your church is growing so quickly, because you told all your people one time during the year, bring somebody to church. One time out of 52 weeks, bring one person to church. They did, and those people stayed. We don't know how you're doing it. And I'm like, it's not rocket science, friends. It's really simple. You put together a brand that is solid that people can believe in. And you know how we knew it was really getting traction? First of all, people started wearing the t-shirts everywhere. And in fact, they started wearing them to other churches, which I would get calls about. Like, why are my people wearing your t-shirts? I was like, I don't know. Do you have a t-shirt? Because maybe then they'd wear your t-shirts. They wouldn't. But and that's just good design, by the way. That's all that is. Bumper stickers. And then one of our baristas was working one day, and she handed me her drink, and she had Lovewell tattooed on her wrist. And I was like, hey. And she's like, I just love this place. And that's how I want to live my life. Now, I'm not advocating for tattoos necessarily, but That's a pretty strong commitment to our mission statement. Do you have the mission statement of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination tattooed on your arm? No, because it's long and you'd need a much bigger arm. But I was blown away, and that's happened multiple times, right? I think it became kind of a thing amongst the baristas for a while, so, you know, whatever. But it's pretty profound that people connect with your brand that much. And I stand up in front of my church and say often, our brand promise to you is that we will be excellent every single week that you come here. We will never put up a bad program for you, number one. Number two, we will always preach for Christ and not against anything. So if you bring a friend from any walk of life, they will not hear something negative about where they come from. Number three, these people will have a wonderful experience in one of a few ways. They may hate preaching and have wonderful coffee. They may hate the music because they're just not into music, but like the preaching. They may hate everything else, but love the preaching. There's going to be something for every single person that walks in this place. And our goal for our, we call them our first impressions team, is to love people so well as they come through the front door that by the time they sit down in our blue chairs, they've already decided, before the service even begins, they've already decided that this is home. Right? And that means that you have to lean into the things that you do well, and you have to not apologize. And when you brand your church, when you go through that process and you understand your identity, it makes it really easy to edit. And what I mean is, it makes it really easy to say no, because we know what we do. We know who we're reaching, and we know that we're pretty effective at it. So when someone comes in and says, I think you should do this, I can go, oh, that sounds awesome, but we're not going to do that because that's not what we do, right? There's other churches that do that, or other places that do that, or if you want to do that, we can even help you do that, but we're not taking that on because that's not what our call is. We're very clear on who we're called to reach, right? And it in my opinion, it makes a pretty significant difference. Once you do all this work, then you can begin to think about things like brand design. So we have a pretty significant brand guidelines so that people don't abuse what our look in the world is. Because you know this, the very first thing anybody knows about you and your church is your social media or your website, right? And so that's important that every single thing you do, everything you put out into the world reaches the same echelon of the brands that people want to use every single day. So like I said, and I'm just going to go through these quickly because it's ridiculous. We have everything from photography. When capturing and posting photos of our Crosswalk campus experiences, focus on 5 different environments: auditorium, worship experience, lifestyle, human connection, CW Kids, The Walk, which is our high school, volunteers in action, cafes. We have this for every one of our sites, every one of our groups, every one of our volunteers reads through all this and signs on it, because everything you produce should matter. From the coffee to the handouts that you give them at church to every bit of messaging that you have happen. And I've just got some examples here. So this is our, these were series guides that we did for our Christmas series a couple years ago. And then a series called Living in the Almost, Living in the Tension. Again, more series guides. We hire designers every single time. We don't just ask a church member if they know Photoshop or not. We have a designer on staff, actually, 3/4 time at this point. We have series guides for every single week, every single day of the series that we do. So we write 400 words, 3 questions as a devotional that is delivered through our app, or you can get the analog, which is paper. You can get the paper piece, or you can download the PDF from our website. It's all there at crosswalkvillage.com. We give it away for free. We give all our coffee away for free. There's no cost to anything. Those are lost leaders. As we understand, people come in and we know we're going to lose money on coffee, but we also know people are going to feel a sense of belonging because of it. So this is how this one particular one was looked up. This is kind of how it looks, our series guide for every single day. By the way, writing every single day, writing for every single day of the year is a big challenge. And I thought it was such a good idea, and then I had to do it. And it's brutal. It's brutal. In fact, I have to do some writing today. But we do everything from our IG stories. Like we do a full package when we put it out, because we also have 5 campuses now that have to look at it. If you want to start a small group with Crosswalk Church, we send you what's called a Lovewell Home Kit. And in it has a ton of different things that you can do, and it tells you how to set up your house so that people coming in have a good experience. There's coasters that have crosswalk on them. There's games to play, opening lines that you can do, and to talk to people about what to expect when they come into your house because you want to set it up in a particular way. These are just some pictures of our campuses right now. That was our early Chattanooga experience. You can see them watching video. So most of our campuses are video campuses. Everything is live except the sermon, which comes from Redlands. Just some baptism stuff. This is our Crosswalk New England. It was Crosswalk Clinton. It went from a theater, which is way too much me, like I said before, that's too big, to now they have a church with a really great worship center. And you can see the commonality in the pictures and the way that the places look, because it's really important. This is our Portland campus. It's really important that we have brand consistency in every single thing that we do. Again, what is evangelism? Evangelism is not a program or event. It's an orientation of the heart of the congregation. All right, all this to say, and I know I was really quick and probably have gone way too long here, but this is what I want you to understand. Church doesn't happen. Church done well doesn't just happen. It's not an accident. It's the intention that you put in from the very beginning. So for instance, this is a silly example. 1 year we decided we didn't like picking up offering. It's just the worst in a church service liturgy, isn't it? You never know where to put it. It's always awkward. You got to have a special music or maybe not. There's just some weird music playing while you're handing out this stuff. And it's kind of, you know, it's a lot. And so we said, we're going to go to completely online giving. We're not even going to mention it during the service anymore. We'll just say something at the end thanking people to give. But we were really nervous that nobody was going to give to the church. And I don't know if you know this, but if you don't give to the church, you can't do church. Church is expensive, especially the way we do it, honestly. So for 10 weeks, I was like, hey, we're going to get rid of offering. And everyone's like, yeah, that'll be great. And I'm like, no, we're not getting rid of giving. That's different. We're just getting rid of offering. Understand? So we gave them all the tools, all the opportunity. And then, by the way, if you're going to do this, don't do it on Easter. Do it the week after Easter. It was so stupid to do it on Easter because, you know, like triple our attendance. It was dumb, but that's my fault. So I said, listen, we're going to do this. If you stop giving, we're going to have to bring it all back. But we were intentional for 10 weeks telling them, laughing about it, making videos about it, making sure that we message it correctly, making sure everybody had the links that they needed to continue to give. I was at a pastor's meeting, and our pastors in our conference have a tendency to like watch what we do and then ask us how it went. But like in weird ways, they're never like, oh, that's really interesting. Tell me. They're like, I see you're giving away offering. That's going to be hard. No one's going to give. Anyway, I was at this meeting and about 3 months later, and there were some of those like kind of weird questions. And they said, well, how's it going? And I said, well, since we got rid of offering, our giving has gone up 33%. And that year, our giving went up 54%. Right, because people appreciated the fact that they didn't have to get accosted by this offering plate going by them or this offering basket. And all we say almost every single week is this: three things at the end of our service. Whoever's doing the send out gets up, sometimes it's me, and I say, listen, I want to thank you first of all for being here and worshiping with us. It is our honor to serve you. Secondly, if you want to pray with someone, our prayer team will be up front. They want to go with you on that journey. Every single week our prayer team is up to pray with people. The third thing, we want to thank you for the way that you continually support Crosswalk Church and its ministries. We know that we're part of a larger denomination, so your tithes are appreciated as well as your local offerings. I always delineate because we have to in this world that we live in. People need to understand how they're giving and what they're giving and where it goes. I think that's important. My conference president agrees with me, even though he'd like me to be less clear sometimes, I think. We laugh about it, sort of. I laugh about it. And then the last thing we say is, and as you know, there's one thing that we want you to do as you leave today. We want you to go and love well. That's how we finish it. We finish every single service with the opportunity to let them know exactly what our mission and our vision is. And the reason why we've been so intentional is because the things that you really connect with in this world are done intentionally. Why would we bring any less than that same sort of deeply focused intention to the work that we do at church? What I never want to sit through again, and I will not sit through in my church, is I will never sit through 30 seconds of dead time. Not sure what's happening. People looking, is it you? Is it me? Is it you? That's pretty simple. There's a thing called planning center. Put it together. Everybody knows what's about to happen. But you have to do things like this. And this is where it's hard when you're at a church that doesn't do this and you want to move towards this kind of transition. When I first got there, I said, hey guys, we're no longer going to have music stands on the stage because our musicians need to know what they're doing. And we need to get the stands that stand in the way, literally, they physically stand in the way between you and the audience. So we're going to get those out of the way. And I had a guy go, hey, I have a real job, which is fun when they say that to pastors. They go, I have a real job. I can't just learn this music. And I said, yes, you can. And he said, well, I'm not going to. And I said, well, that's different. So if you can't, then you're not going to play here. And he said, I've been playing here for 10 years. And I said, I am so grateful for your service. I'm sorry we won't be able to have it anymore. And he got very angry and he left. And then he came back. And you know what? He learned his music. But we also made sure that if we're going to take away all the music stands so people can't be looking at their music, that we're going to have 5 massive screens in the back so they have all the information that they need. We're going to make sure that we give them all the tracks 3 weeks in advance, make sure that they know exactly what the arrangements are going to be. We have to do our work to make them excellent, but then they have to buy in to doing it. And now when excellence becomes the very lowest bar, like, it's fascinating because every Tuesday we sit down and say, what can we do better, right? How'd the program go? What can we do better? What can we shore up? There's always something more we can fix, but the program gets better and better and better. And the reason why we do that sort of intentional programming is so that when someone's sitting in the seat, they don't see any of it. It goes away. They don't see microphones being handed. They don't have any awkward spaces. All they need to do is enter into an experience with God that we're, you know, blessed to be able to curate. And I got to tell you, there is no place greater to preach than a Crosswalk church, in my opinion, in the Adventist world. And this is great, just for the record. Like, this place is awesome. But every week, I get to get up seamlessly with you know, right after a bumper that comes on for our series that has been made. In fact, our videographer just won an Addy Award and a marketing and advertising award for one of the bumpers he did for church. Like, that's crazy. He didn't even tell us. Like, it showed up on social media, and someone's like, hey, did you know Nico did this? And he's like, no big deal. I'm like, it seems like a big deal, man. When excellence becomes the lowest bar that you'll accept, people gravitate towards what you're doing, and they don't even know why. They just know it makes them feel the way they want to feel about God, about community. And in my opinion, we should be offering nothing less than the very best that we have to our Lord Jesus Christ. And so anyway, I could go on for hours. I'm not going to. Thank you so much. And as you leave today, love well.
It's inspiring. And hopefully you can think of a few things that just trig for you at your church, for your church things, not even just church, but all those church things, things that you might want to look at. How do we do that? How can we make it good? How can we make it accessible? How can we make it show love? And how can we avoid cringe? Tomorrow, we're going to do this again. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about something simple and easy, women's ordination. So we're going to be joined by Pastor Terry Johnson. He's the president of the Australian Union Conference. So he's our biggest cheese in Australia. So he's going to talk to us about women's ordination and how we're going there. And we're going to hear from Bethany Chapman. She's going to talk to us about women ministry ideas and how we can do things pertaining to women and ministry. Should be great. Come along. Please be here 9:30 tomorrow morning. Thanks for coming. Love well.